those jewels, the changeable suits of apparel, and the mantles and the whistles and the crystals and the glasses and the fine linen and hoods and the veils. Instead of a well set hair, instead of a skeleton, a beauty and self up. Burning and fire, and men shall fall over the floor and fall mighty in the air. And the face shall emit in morning, which is to be careful.
Yes, ma'am. You be careful out there. Hold on to your stomacher and touch.
Is it really windy out there?
Windy? Not really. Of course, I can't tell in the car. Well, it's chilly. It's like not quite 50 yet. Yeah, you can come out and see if you feel so inclined. Hey, keep you going. Oh. All right. Okay, got all that stuff and all that. Got this. Trash is out. Place is good. Yes, ma'am. See you tonight. Bye. Alright. What? Yeah, it's windy. It's okay. I'm used to it either way. I love you. Bye. Okay. Now we're off and going. Oh, we didn't... I talked about a whole lot of things yesterday, and none of it got recorded. Just kind of the break of the system. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't know exactly what the criteria is particularly, but there it is. Today, windy, but not terribly windy. Breezy at least for around here. Probably 20 mile an hour wind gust. This isn't much, but but a north wind, so it's chilly. In the 40s according to the temperature gauge in the car, which is very, at least it doesn't consider it very accurate. I'll take her word for it. So, actually blowing in from, I can feel it kind of on my east cheek. I've got my more wintry stuff in my backpack, just in case it just gets a little too nippy. I've got to get my stuff on. And this is pretty much still what I do most of the winter too. Occasionally, if it's really cold, I'll bring out the heavy jacket. You know, if it's going to be like the teens. But sometimes I don't have to. Once you get warmed up properly, in your hands, in your ears. Of course, got the hat on at the top of the head, so it doesn't lose too much heat that way. usually goes pretty well. Unless I'm just feeling cold. Last night we left the window open, as we usually do, through a good part of the fall. And, it was quite chilly. But it was great because, you know, we had our blankets and... I think it's good for killing off the bugs. Yesterday you could tell the flies really wanted in the house for protection. I guess it's coming. Flies know what's going on. You can trust flies to be highly responsive to weather patterns. I mean, if the flies are all over the windows or the car, you know it's going to get colder, and they're all, I don't know, worried. But they're all preparing for the fact that they're probably going to die from the cold. Anyway, so. Let's see. I don't think I could ever even begin to resurrect what I tried to talk about yesterday on the off chance that I'm still recording now. I can't begin to remember. And, I was reading an article yesterday by Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert, and, He's got interesting philosophy of life. He can say interesting things about it, but sometimes I kind of wonder about his logic. I guess his idea. He's a successful writer for the time. There's successful guys that their blogs do really well. There's this guy who had done a significant study on it, and he was putting those. He learned in the app, and doing quite well. I think it's like James Altucher or something. And he morphed it into a couple of books. Things like that. You know, it's mostly about lists, you know, his research told that people love lists. And they love ones that the kind of go against conventional wisdom. Ones that tell you something new. And that are rather short. And, he got good at that. He's a guy that talks often about the futility of going to college, about how it's a waste of money that is. And list of things you should be doing instead. He ended up kind of being a little bit of a broken record. So I don't know how popular he continues to be, because once you've read, you know, him for a few months, there's really you really got to stick to them. You know, you go, okay, I understand. And then you don't have to listen to them anymore. It's like, I know you want to call it a bad idea. He's also against home ownership because it ties you down. And I kind of agree with that. Although now I'm paying the price of not being a homeowner anymore. I'm paying significantly more for housing than I had to pay when I was in a house, in a large house at that. But I don't know how long I'm going to be able to. I tell Lisa it's up to her. I think she wants to get a significant war chest going. I was really going to say that there are places that will buy out your mortgage and accept the risk of somebody defaulting on it for like 60% of its face value right there. And we may ultimately end up doing that from just the standpoint of needing to have a really good down payment on the next house, especially if we're careful, it doesn't cost too much, and it's manageable with my income that I'm going to be getting when we finally decide upon this. It needs to be small and stuff like that. Anyway, John Altschulz. I didn't ever know really how to do that. I think he had been on a few, he'd gotten into being consulted a few times on like television, radio. He'd been a featured guest on podcasts and things like that. But you have to understand that this stuff is all really desperately fleeting. Any kind of media success you have, you better enjoy it while you have it, because it isn't likely to be consistent unless they actually hire you. But usually you're just a stint. It isn't that you're going to be a regular anywhere. Probably, especially a guy who only really has maybe four or five things to say. And it really ends up being, this is being tricky. It doesn't end up being a product or something that can sustain long term. Anyway, so that's really interesting. Taya tells me that she's been sharing the Mariner's Log, which is God's Plan for Happiness in 10 Simple Symbols. With people, with our sister missionaries here. And I was thinking that it's another time to put a little push out there. One of the reasons I went on Facebook was because my father told me that that would be a good way to advertise that thing. I don't know how these things get covered exactly. I don't know if the law could be protected by copyright, or I haven't registered the trademark. That's because both of those concepts lie strictly within the realm of, you know, you have to be willing to put forth a lot of money to protect these things. The thing itself, having a copyright, which everybody has by nature, or to have a trademark, is only worthwhile if you're willing to protect it. So like a patent, although a patent's much harder to protect. You're constantly in court fighting. That's what those concepts provide you, is with some justification that you are able to sue for infringement. If you're not willing or not able, and frankly, I'm just not able to even begin to sue for infringement, I don't see any point in spending the money. I've done a few things that indicate that I had ownership at one time of the term navigiary. Come back and go, oh no, I came up with that, that's mine. And you go, oh, we have tons of evidence that it is not. You know, public places as well. To say that this stuff is the way it is. So, we'll kind of see where that goes. Anyway, Scott Adams did this interesting thing about setting goals and working a plan. It was posted in the Wall Street Journal. Kind of an excerpt from a book, an upcoming book. On success, and I guess more than anything else, how not to pursue it, although he does give ideas on how to pursue it. And I'm always kind of concerned. Scott Adams' logic is often circular, if you can call it logic at all. How'd you say it? Crafty? And well stated. So I'm not sure I'm ready to completely say, yes, I agree. You know, it's like, I don't know. But then he says, you know, he says, goals, the biggest problem with goals are, is you're constantly not reaching them. And the thing that he says he's found is that people lose the kind of enthusiasm that success requires as they pursue things. He had a whole little section about, you know, it's hard to understand what made somebody or something successful. You know, often these people don't write down what they say, we just kind of forget what made them successful. So, you know, whole reams of paper have been used to try and spell out where success comes from. And then, the worst ones are the guys who are successful. They actually do kind of write down and tell you what they think were successful. And most of the time, they're wrong. Quote success, at least the time that we measure success, is based just as much on luck as on anything else. You know, good fortune. I've noticed that time and time again. It's almost like lightning striking. And people, you know, and people don't want to think that is true, because, you know, that's something that can't be controlled. And people don't want to think that success is based on things that really they can't do anything about. That's not completely true. But it's more true than what's currently being taught. He said, okay, so take for instance, people always say that you should follow your passion. And he said, you know, I was a loan officer at a bank. And he goes, that was one of the definite telltale signs that you shouldn't give somebody a loan, is that they're following your passion. And he gave an example of a very successful salesman. He didn't like sales very much. He said he didn't really like his job. He said, but he was good at it. Being good at something is a real indicator of success. Not passive, but being good at something. Because sometimes we don't know what we're good at. Like, for instance, computers for me, I'll tell you, when I was working in New Mexico State, they said, oh, you didn't have a job forever because you're just so good at this. And you go, well, that's wonderful, but it's boring and I don't find it interesting at all. Spend all day fixing people's computers. Usually they're pretty stupid problems. Or easily solve problems. Sometimes they're tasty and interesting, and I enjoy, you know, there's some definite positive feedback by overcoming something that was difficult. But otherwise, doesn't inspire me at all. Other things inspire me. But this salesman, who's really good at what he did, he made a lot of money. And, because you have to understand, it said, success breeds enthusiasm and excitement. You know, the things that are needed to sustain something long term. And you go, if you do a startup and it's failing, you'll find that even if you're passionate about it, you're going to start losing that passion as it starts affecting other parts of your life, as you struggle and suffer. So, because on the other hand, even if there's something that you don't like, if success will breed its own, will breed its own excitement. And so I said, don't follow your passion. This is, do what you're good at. I think I finally fell into that thing finally, you know, for saying, you know what, I want to do something besides computer work. But you know what? I'm quite good at it. And so, does that end up being where the money is? Because I'll tell you, passion, you know, I got a bit of a passion for family. For home and family. Oh, that was what I was talking about yesterday. It was about stuff that happened at that meeting on Friday. But let me tell you, anytime I've done something home ecky, the pay's lousy. I mean, it's better than nothing. I'm not gonna shortchange. The fact that when I can't get a computer job for some reason, that home ec work is really quite helpful. Getting through those lean times, if that's available to me. So it's always been a good fallback. But does it even begin to make as much money as I make now? Gosh, no. It's definitely a second income. It always will be. Designed that way, you know. Your lawyer husband goes off and makes a lot of money, and it lets your wife be the starving social worker type person. Anyway, so let's see. What is my wandering off to? Oh yeah, the whole be careful your passions. Because your passions will typically lead you in the wrong direction. And I've gotta say that I have found that to be true as well, but I still want to work on them as applications. I am going to get back to writing on Navigiary again, but it's going to be after I finish up my master's degree, after the Shetland thing is at least through the pipe. I don't know what it's going to do ultimately. Oh. both of those things I'll pick up in the video again. But that's after I've jumped up another level or two. You know, I don't know where it's all going to lead. But, you know, I don't think I'm going to get to it until I've gotten a master level job. Where people are showing you know, what's going on, how things are going. So yeah, excuse me for everything. I've always thought that this was kind of my last season. If I was going to change my stars, try to do something a little more, pointed, this would be the time to do it. I am hopeful always. The good things will come. And I think that's what, Scott Adams, you know, the Gilbert guy, was saying in his thing, was instead of following your passions, instead of setting goals and trying to accomplish them, he said, goals are interesting, but you tend to, you tend to ride them far too long if they're not ahead of where you're going, you know. He'd always did in like business creation sense. You should be far more interested in a process. And as he always said, I've noticed that with successful people, it isn't that they set goals and try to accomplish them. It was the process that they used, the kind of people that they were, and it made it. He says, you can't make yourself more susceptible to luck. You know, luck is luck. I mean, it strikes and then it's gone. He says, but you can put yourself in a position that when luck does come, that you are more able, capable, ready to take advantage of. You know, and that failure is just as good a teacher as success is. In fact, failure is usually a better teacher than success is. Success tells you that success is easy. You know, people don't write books about failure. And conveniently, when these books are ghostwritten, and they almost always are, you know, on these successful people, they tend to leave out a lot of the heartache, a lot of the failures that they've gone through. And he said, fail often. not if you set a goal to fail. That's silly. He says, but know that failure is usually the road to success. The road to success is through the failures. Because the whole point is to learn from them and to grow and to continue getting better, learning from your mistakes, things you won't ever do again. And I think that each individual's road is so unique that you really can't put a lot of stock into other people's recipe, for lack of a better word, for success. Except in the broadest generalities. Like, just having a good process and continue to work and move forward. And I guess that's what I'm doing with my master's degree. I got the distinct impression that was one of the things that held me back in getting my job, like last year, in the big 2012 year of the Shetland Plan A and the Alaska Plan B, was people are having to stretch pretty hard and far to even consider me when I didn't have any real sizable credentials. You know? I was just this guy. Didn't have a bachelor's degree in it. Now I know plenty of guys with bachelor's degrees in them that are very not very good. I was competing against people that weren't very good, but that had the credentials, so that when somebody asked them, well, why'd you hire this guy? It was easy to pull out the thing and say, well, look, he has a degree in IT and stuff like that. It was a harder sell for me because they're like, well, yeah, experience is nice, but I want to see a degree out of this guy. You know, you're not going to hire him. So I wanted to fix that problem. The original thought was to get a bachelor's in it, but it's like, I already have a bachelor's. Can I get a master's? And the great part was, I could. That means I go from having to flounder around with the people with associate degrees and bachelors who have, you know, that have some education, but very little experience. Now I'm leapfrogging all that. And I've got a master's plus experience, plus I'm really good at it. So, I guess I'm trying to find a place in IT that really, where I can do the things I want to do, probably as avocation. You know, I get the impression that in my patriarchal blessing, the whole concept of means has to come, is really tied to the life work. What you're doing. And you go, I've only got 15, 20 years left, honestly, in working. And you go, there's no time to build up some sort of, you know, another career. if I haven't done it by now, I better just stick with what I've got. You know, am I inspired? No. You go, but is that really what it's all about? Following your passion, blah, blah, blah. You go, that's what your avocations are about. So writing and other things like that are simply hobbies. And if it makes a ton of money later on, it's wonderful, you know. Other than that, I need to at least get the staff so that I can play on a serious level. Because right now, you know, I'm behaving like a person who's probably one or two, you know, pay grades above where I am right now. I mean, I'm not excited about being a manager of IT, although that's what my degree ends up being in. It ends up being more about more of being at that level. And if people don't question your ability to do it particularly, that, I think that's what I've been struggling with the most. For the people saying, well, we don't think he's got the chops. And you go, he's got a master's degree in it. It says that indicates something. And you go, and experience. He's done this stuff too. Look at what he's done. You go, yep. So, I have to get up to that level. And that sort of place. Because I'm really not the person who says, you know, well, we're going to, you know, we're going to be the leader in our field, no matter what. No, 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 I'm not that kind of guy. I'd rather be a high-tier specialist, technician, troubleshooting sort of a fella than I would being a depth manager, telling people how to work the system. Just not interesting to me. So, it's like in Star Trek. They made Kirk an admiral, took him off a ship. He had basically a desk job, you know, in charge of whatever, training and stuff like this, and blah, blah, blah. And you're just going, what a waste of material. And that's exactly what they said, it's a waste of material. You should be doing what's your best at, which is being a captain of the starship. So it's like, well, I've been thinking about that. And saying, you know what? I don't know what the future holds for me. Am I going to take opportunities? Yeah. opportunity to present to me?
Sure.
I'm just going to look at them seriously. More seriously than I have in the past. In the past, I've been willing to pass up things. I need to get more strident about putting the latest thing that I'm doing in my CV so I don't forget about them when the moment arrives. It's time to jump ship. I've got a good, excellent list of everything that I've pulled together and take on the bigger project. For what you want to do, there is some, just from a retirement standpoint, there is some there's some interest in staying with education institutions in New Mexico, because I've already got 10 years built up to retirement in doing it. I really like the Ruy Doso opportunity, and I think that if the guy that they get now doesn't last very long, I might go for that job again if I'm still around here. I like it from the standpoint of being in the mountains. Oh, that was going to be so cool. But it seemed that the timing wasn't right. I need to have my master's. I need to, get sizably more experience at nearly everything that I'm being involved with, so that I can be, so that I can do the best job I can. I seem to be an incredibly quick study, an incredibly quick person to pick up what is salient, and rejection of the rest for making things happen. I don't know where ultimately I'm supposed to go, or what ultimately I'm supposed to do, but we're going to leave the thing open. I'll be really excited toward something that works on the retirement. That'd be great. Especially if it pays a lot more. Because then I get an excellent retirement out of it. The best 5 years, or the last 5 years, I think it's your last 5, your best 5, your your best five to the last 10 probably ends up being try and mix the magic here. So if I can somehow get myself in a good position, with one of the colleges here. And so I was looking at Lisa because I think Las Vegas would be an excellent location. She doesn't like it. And it's like, well, if you're Hispanic, nobody talks to you. Nobody talks to me. Anyway, so, I don't know what's going on. Staying close to the mountains, but has all the things that you need too. It doesn't really end up being a tourist town. That was one of the downsides of Ruidoso was that it was a tourist town. And Las Vegas really isn't. Santa Fe is just as close to the mountains as Las Vegas is. So you don't go up there to get closer to the mountains. Pecos, which is closer to Santa Fe, is even better. Anyway, we shall see. We shall see what happens, what comes. And I don't know. I do not know. Or if we're just going to go someplace completely different, which I would like to do as well. I don't think I've got so much invested in the system here that I can't walk away from that too. I'm in a good position here in a few years if I haven't moved on to something else. I need to go ahead, I need to just stay where I am to a degree, whether it's New Mexico working for educational institutions or things like that. So this conference that we're doing, for the New Mexico TIE conference, I think is good. And if there are opportunities that are coming up, I should find out about it. Since I'm halfway through my master's, I'm plugging away, hope to be done in 4 or 5 months. And, hey, we'll see what happens out of that. So, yeah, there's Scott Adams stuff. Sorry, kind of working back to what I was talking about before. About what he thinks. I don't know how to follow it except to continue to leave avenues open. You can't be crazy about it because then you're set to something. And that's what I think I've been struggling more with is taking on too many projects, and I need to be really careful of that. Anyway, I'm thinking about things that today, I think today is the day that we get back on the stick about help desk software. You understand, we've got some help desk software that's recent. It's a little difficult to use. I said, but any good solution is going to require some upgrade. Anything that's easy to use probably isn't going to fit our situation very well. It'll be more of, this is how I think help desk should go, and we have to align ourselves with it. I'm a believer in open source software because you can take it as it is, and with some time and with some experience, you can change it according to your needs. I think that's a great goal. You don't end up being a Microsoft shop that ends up being really the only thing. Or a Dell shop. It's really coming up that we're looking at Dell. I guess next year we're looking to see what vendor we're going to use for servers for the next 3 to 4 years. At least for our server side, and to be honest, there's starting to be fewer contenders in the market. At some point, it's either going to be that there's going to be no choices, or only two. And those two aren't serious competitors with each other. You know, they're already carving out what their niches are, already making it so that only one company really wants to do it. I think when it comes to servers, I don't know if Dell has a significant competition to it. Anyway, so, yeah, so we'll be looking at that here. Today we'll be looking at this stuff, knowing that we're not locked into Dell, and that we have no intention of putting ourselves into a position where we have to be locked into Dell, which is we have a mix of Microsoft and open source. Because you're not getting into the operating system business, are you? No. Like, okay, well then. Microsoft, along with their operating systems and their management systems for their network, hands us this stuff for free. Why am I paying money to you for something that Microsoft is giving you for free? For the cost of simply going through the effort of learning how to do. Microsoft has infinite knowledge on how to work with Active Directory. It's their product. And that's one of our bigger needs is that we want these systems to work properly together. As much as they can, draw the majority of its information from that setup. And you go, it seems like a stack that's already integrated from the very beginning with Active Directory is far better than something that you guys bought up cobbled together. And you can say it integrates with Active Directory, but I'm sure it doesn't integrate as well as Microsoft products. And so they end up winning. Sorry. Uh-oh. Fire truck, I think. Or something. I go right past the main fire station in town. So, I'm always a little nervous, giddy, whatever. Want to get past that place before something happens. So it sounds like something's already happened. I think it rivals the sound of sirens as a dog is baying. Interesting. I swear they make the sirens as shrill the dog as they can so that they can get more action out of it. Oh, yesterday, I watched the last episode of Burn Notice. I went and checked on the internet, and sure enough, it is the last episode. There is no more. And I thought they did a pretty decent job of bringing closure to it. They did a lot with catchphrases, you know? About how you're supposed to, my name's Michael West, and I used to just spy. Sam calls spies bitchy little girls, or whiny little girls, or something like that. A whole lot of catchphrases were put back in this episode. They made reference to it, really. And I thought it pretty good. I mean, it's tough. Life, maybe even God or something, offered Michael a way just to get out. But everybody thought that he had died. And everybody can go on with their lives. It seems like Sam and Jesse are gonna do stuff together. You know, they're gonna say, "Yeah, I got this thing good. I could use some help down in Boca." They were always kind of helping somebody out in Boca. So. Happened to them and Michael and C, who are presumed dead out of a circumstance, you know, out of a revenge killing. Michael turned on this guy and he was so weird about the honor and about revenge against those that break that honor, that he killed himself in order to kill Michael. And the woman that turned him, they were supposed to have died in a huge thing. And that's kind of what happened. They died. At least as far as anybody thought. They had a funeral for him. He got his star on the wall at Langley for services to his country. You know, had the full military funeral. You know, he ultimately died a hero because he finally closed off the those problems. He completed his final mission, although it wasn't how anybody wanted it to go. And but they all said at the very end, they have Mark 1 and C together, and you're wondering, what are they going to do with their lives now? Now they've got different identities. Somewhat in hiding, seclusion. You know, when you're going to work, where do they get the money that they have to survive? And just kind of lose that stuff, kind of not answered. But then again, there was a lot about the show that was a little uncanny. Lisa's always saying she leaves behind DNA and fingerprints everywhere she goes, and nothing ever seems to happen to her. You know, and it's like, it's true. Like they were under some kind of charm or something that made it so that nobody cared. Anything that they did that happened, there was some kind of veil over it, you know, all of a sudden it'd be covered over and it's like, oh, none of that. So, anyway. I think I'm still getting to the point where I figure out where things are. Fellowship Hall. How is that? We, the wardens leader here, Art Payne, is a convert, and he usually refers to things at church by their Baptist counterpart. Well, in this case, Methodist, I suppose. Although I think it's Mother Protestant. Although, I don't know, Catholic would say. They call the basketball court a fellowship hall. And he calls it that. And I don't, you know, it's a culture hall for us. So, anyway. I'm just this guy that walks around and talks. So, although I'm recording it, more of a recording. So I'm sure people do that. Look and say, I thought that just walks around and talks to himself. You know, they go, oh, a little bit touched. And you go, oh. What more can I say than what has already been said? Recording going. Doesn't really matter. I'll keep on talking anyway. Might as well pass by this house that I suggest we'll be saying. She gave you the big thumbs down. senseless. I don't know what this wants. And I mix it up too much with what I'm willing to do, or willing to try, that she's not. So I end up just kind of saying, you know, you decide it. You know the money situation. You know how these things go. But she wants my help, so she'll let me know. I don't have to get involved otherwise. You know, I've got other things to be worried about. Got plenty of things on my plate anyway. One thing about the Ruidoso thing was that it was a terrible distraction that in the end was difficult to fight back from. It was difficult to get back on the track. I only had one thing to do really to finish up the semester. Well, I was hard pressed to finally get the gumption together to get it done. And each of my assignments has been kind of that way, in that at some point you just get a big push to it, you get to where you feel like it's in good shape, and then you turn it in, knowing that it's not going to be accepted. I was totally surprised one time I did that, and it was accepted. Didn't have to do any more on it. But usually, it'll include other things. So, that's been an interesting thing to see about myself. But I'm halfway through. In the first semester, I'm really wanting to get done with this thing in the second term, starting the term. You know, otherwise it's going to cost me another $3,000. Not me, but it's going to cost my inheritance $3,000. And honestly, I use up my inheritance early because There's several things that might ruin it later. There might not be anything there at all. You know, number one, it's still my mom's name. As long as it's still my mom's name, if she needs to go to a nursing home or something, all that stuff gets taken. And my brother and I split nothing. So my thought has always been, you know, invest now, you know, use that stuff as investment money toward better education, toward things that are needed. That's what money is for anyway. The whole thing of having a big nest egg after somebody is dead is really quite purposeful. My father's mother finally passed away in when my dad was 69. He was retired. He didn't need any of that money. I have no idea where any of that money went. I think it just went to the funeral. After the funeral was done, everything was gone. And it was. All of a sudden you're found with this extra junk that is of minimal value to you. And with the whole concept of money kind of being inconsequential to the people who are getting it, you know, so I end up spending it on a cruise or something, which is fine, but would have come in handier earlier, you know. My father could have used that kind of money early on to get his education instead of getting his education when he was in his 50s, probably how that was to me. But his education is paid for by the government through vocational rehabilitation, which I thought was funny, because honestly, Dad had plenty of money just to do it himself without that help. I don't know if that ultimately happened. That's kind of a story that I gleaned out of it. So yeah, no, you kind of feel a little bit like the prodigal son. Although I'm not spending my inheritance in riotous living on any level at all. It ends up being taking advantage of opportunities, things like that. Anyway, so I this is a beautiful house. Got some interesting aspects to it. New house behind, but that's interesting. Ugly. I'll give you it's ugly. Anyway, so taking care of some stuff, using it for good purposes. Because I do think ultimately the most important thing is to make that money useful when it can be useful, and not just hold on to it as a miser. And I'm the worst of that. I'm a terrible manager. Like I was saying, this probably got lost, and probably get lost again, probably not recording now, but, next week, Lisa and I are celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary. By golly, it's been 25 years. And, that's exciting. I need to find us a good place to stay in Albuquerque. We're going to go to Albuquerque, and we're just going to go to the temple and have a good time, just spend time together. Not wake up early. Things like that. Which reminds me, going up on Monday is kind of interesting because the temple's already open on Monday. So it's good, okay. And it lets me know that we should just do it for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We are going to stay at a nice place with breakfast. Tuesday and Wednesday morning. Then we'll come home on Wednesday. Not too early. Leave our kids to handle things. It's one nice thing about walking. Police officers don't bother people who are about anything. I mean, I could probably kill somebody. As long as I was walking, they probably wouldn't know. They probably would say, oh, well, I'll let it go. You know? I've got cars to chase after, stuff like that. So, we shall see. Let's come. What happened? This morning, Canada. It is a very nice campus. Very nice, very nice. And I suppose. I'm not sure exactly what's happening. So what else is simple to me? Maybe I'll keep that up here. And Lisa is even said, oh, so she was looking at better places to live. And it's like, oh, so that's a possibility too. One place is just as much like another as any. Don't be shy about taking advantage of things that come up. I'm doing a lot at work, you know, when there's something that I invite to, even if it's just off stuff I need to attend, I tend to attend it. What's going on? actually have a recording, did. It went all the way through.